It's referred to as the common killer you've never heard of. Sepsis is an infection in your blood. Once it's there, it can move swiftly through your body, inciting an inflammatory response, which can result in inadequate blood supply to your major organs. And that can lead to organ failure, and then to death. According to Dr. Catherine Caseberg of the Illinois State University Mennonite College of Nursing, sepsis is mistakenly considered as something that just impacts the elderly. Sepsis can affect people of any age, and it can be sparked by any number of things.
Sepsis is basically caused by an exposure to microorganisms. It can be viral, but most often it is bacterial. Any type of infectious exposure that becomes fulminating could potentially become bloodborne and then lead to the syndrome.
Is it common for that to occur?
Not in a patient who is not immunocompromised. Patients who are HIV positive, patients who are taking medications that suppress the immune system, such as steroid medications. People with chronic hypermetabolic syndromes are in a state of being immunocompromised. They're more vulnerable to acquiring infections.
Well, what are the symptoms of sepsis? I mean, since it can lead to death, we need to understand if we've got this.
Typically, sepsis will initially manifest as a fever, a tachycardia, which is a fast heart rate, and an elevated white blood cell count. Initially. From that point, if interventions are not initiated, it will progress to a syndrome that can lead to a shock. So sepsis is a syndrome that can be managed with antibiotics, but if it progresses without intervention, it moves into a shock syndrome where the blood pressure drops very, very low to the point that the organs have decreased blood supply and become damaged.
Is this easy to diagnose?
It is fairly easy to diagnose when it has moved into the septic shock syndrome. I have cared for many, many patients with sepsis, and they clinically presented in one similar way. You had a patient that had an egregiously low blood pressure that did not respond to traditional therapies that we might initiate for low blood pressures. So, for example, if a patient came in to my care and the blood pressure was running 76 over 40, one might suspect that they had a fluid volume deficit or that they were dehydrated. The natural sequence of events would be that we would want to provide fluid resuscitation, and most patients respond very positively. Be a patient with sepsis, you give them volumes and volumes and volumes of fluid into their blood vessels, but their blood pressure doesn't come up. That's because in septic shock, the infectious organisms actually cause the blood vessels to dilate, and they don't have any tone. So therefore, you just are like filling up a tank, but there's no tone in the tank, and so therefore, the pressure in the tank does not come up. Patients with sepsis do improve when you give drugs that cause blood vessels to vasoconstrict, or you give drugs that cause your blood vessels, which are dilated, to become constricted. So when I've cared for patients with sepsis, they don't respond to fluids. But if I start them on a medicine such as norepinephrine or epinephrine, which causes blood vessels to vasoconstrict, and then I put fluids into those constricted blood vessels, then they will respond.
Is there any way we can prevent sepsis? What do we do? Are there vaccinations for it?
There's no vaccination specifically, you know, for sepsis, but we must, as caregivers, we must be meticulous about how we control microbe exposure in our healthcare environment.
Well, just last week, we lost Patty Duke to sepsis. And as sad as that is something like that, when that occurs, does that help to raise the awareness level?
I read about Patty Duke's tragic death. The cause of her death was a ruptured colon. And that in and of itself is not going to be the mainstream cause of sepsis in society as a whole. However, it is very easy to understand how she became septic because the bowel is just full of microorganisms. And if there's a hole in the bowel, then the microorganisms leak into the peritoneal cavity. The patient gets a peritonitis. which is an infection of the peritoneum, and then those microbes get into the bloodstream and she develops that syndrome. That her syndrome itself isn't terribly common as it relates to society as a whole.
What are some very common ways we can develop sepsis?
Well, for example, just having your teeth cleaned. As you know, the oral cavity is a very dirty cavity, and everything we put into our mouth is dirty as well. So consequently, when you go and you get your teeth cleaned, basically they are basically going through and working on your gums, and often there's bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
So you have microorganisms in your mouth, and then you have blood in your mouth, or you had blood vessels that are now traumatized, so you're having some small amount of bleeding. And so typically, in a normal individual, that wouldn't cause you to develop sepsis. However, if I'm an individual who has a synthetic heart valve, or I have a synthetic graft on a blood vessel in my chest cavity, those organisms that now have become bloodborne can actually travel to those synthetic or abnormal structures in your body, and they attach themselves to those synthetic structures in the body, and then basically organisms can colonize and propagate to the point that it can cause a patient to develop sepsis. So that's why you see often when people have heart valves or synthetic grafts in their body, the dentist will order antibiotics prior to the teeth cleaning procedure, because what they want to do is they want to make sure that the microbes are controlled during the teeth cleaning so that we don't have these synthetic grafts or valves that become infected. As a nurse, having cared for so many patients that have sepsis, and I look at what brought them to the acute care setting, there were signs and symptoms days and days before they ended up in the hospital. And I always wish that instead of waiting till the sepsis had manifested itself to the level it became a shock syndrome, if they had gone and sought healthcare earlier when the symptoms were just a little bit of a fever and a heart rate and some malaise, if they had sought out healthcare then, instead of waiting until 3 days later and it's manifested now into a syndrome where their blood pressure is very, very low and their organs are being damaged.
That's Dr. Catherine Caseberg from Illinois State University's Mennonite College of Nursing. She adds that many people who get sepsis and receive prompt care can completely recover. Those who delay care risk permanent organ damage if they survive. I'm Laura Kennedy.